at UFOParanormalRadioNetwork.com. And if you're in the New Orleans area, you can listen at UPRN 105.3 FM. Feel free to submit your questions as well as comments in the Pal Talk chat room. Also, before we get started, I'd like to say happy birthday to Joe Montalvo, who is the producer of the show and owner of the network.
Would you like to explore the facts and truths of what ufology and UFO research are all about? And please join us here every Saturday evening at 7 p.m.
I'm very honored to have retired U.S. Air Force Colonel Robert Friend as my guest tonight. And a big thanks goes out to my buddy Bob Emanator for arranging this interview. Bob Friend was a member of the famous Tuskegee Airmen, the first African-American squadron formed in the early 40s.
Hi, this is James
Otha Yunchik,
the Black Knight of Talk
he
Radio, inviting you to join me on a road to truth
via
the path
most
of non-contradiction. Join us each week on Feet to the Fire,
from
a show with the goals of examining a subject matter on its own merits.
He worked with Dr.
And test
J.
how it stands
Allen
up
Heine,
to the many possibilities found in reality. All without pre-drawn conclusions found in personal bias. No left or right wings here.
From the Air Force,
no pounding the pulpit of ego-driven my way or the highway attitudes. But there are no free passes given either. Answers to questions are important, but equally important is the reasons and methods used
to find the answer. And that's really the short list. He has a whole host of degrees and awards, and he's accomplished so many things during his life that it's just impossible for me to go over them all here now. But it is a great honor to have you with us tonight. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you.
Listen, most people that listen to this show are going to be interested in what you did with Project Blue. And one of the things when I started looking over the information that I wondered is, how did you feel about being assigned to Blue? Was it a coveted job?
Well, actually, I sort of backed into the job.
Later
I went to
Kevin Smith Show.
At that time,
Hi,
it was called ATIC.
Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right
Center,
here on the Paranormal
to,
Radio Network.
To perform another task. However, the gentleman named Gregory, who was in charge of this program,
www.paranormalradio.com.
They anticipated his return. He just never came back. And so while I thought I was doing it temporarily, it ended up as a job that I had to do for the 5 years that I was there.
Did Gregory have any words of wisdom for you when you took
him? I hardly had
get
any.
Get your dose of truth
with
the True Hearts Radio Show with your host, Charles Giuliani, Monday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. The truth hurts. Ignorance
okay,
kills.
So you didn't even speak with him before he left.
No, I didn't.
Hey.
Well, listen.
Hey
when you did take the director job for Blue Book, who briefed you
hey,
for the position,
really
and what were you told? Then?
Well, actually, I had a long talk with Dr. Arnie, and also with Mr. Francis RCA, who was the science advisor for the organization.
And do tune in to the from 7 to 9 p.m. on Tuesday.
And what did they tell you?
Well, essentially what they did was to outline what the program was and what they thought the objectives of the program was and the people that I was going to be interfacing with. Actually, you see, ATIC was a part of the air staff. It was an intelligence environment that the whole thing was being conducted at that time.
So it was an intelligence operation.
It was an intelligence organization actually belonging to the air staff. It was later transferred to the research and development activities of the Air Force.
Voice of the People. Together, we can expand our
what was Blue Book's real purpose? Was it to investigate UFOs, to debunk UFOs, or was it more of a public relations gig?
Well, it was hardly public relations.
Say that again.
Actually, the organization.
Are you a fan of the
job was to really and truthfully do the second phase of that kind of an operation. For instance, the airport would certainly react to anything that posed a potential threat to our country's safety. The defense system was set up to perform those tasks. Now, after the takeover, then what they wanted to do was to make some determination of what the excitement really were. For two reasons. Number one, each time that they activated that defense system, that was when you were most vulnerable.
PRN,
so they didn't want to activate that system unless it was really and truthfully a threat. That meant
unless
that you had to have that meant that you needed to know the signature of a lot of the things that were showing up on their radars.
Okay. And what was two?
To UFO
under that?
Wednesday.
You said one, and then what was two?
Oh, two, of course, was really and truly see whether or not there was anything that was of technical, I mean, not only a technical nature, but of an intelligence nature. For instance,
ZTalk Live is coming to UPRN.
Maybe there were.
Join ZTalk Live.
During the time that I was there, for instance,
not only did we cover politics,
we
also covered paranormal, everything in between.
The Russians were firing ice warheads.
With your host, Joel Sturgis, and
what we were doing is
every week they bring us
all
the most mind bending and exhilarating talk. Join us Monday night, 11 p.m. Eastern to 1 a.m. Eastern, right here on UPRN 105.
Oh, because then if you reported on it, then they would have that same information and they knew exactly where they were hitting.
That's exactly right. However, when we investigated it for this potential, we found out that the ice that we were having hit into these various areas was really of casual water, and I'm sure that what they would have done would have been using something that was a lot cleaner, because otherwise the ice starts for reentry, it would burn up with a lot of foreign material in it.
Okay, so you're saying that Blue Book's objective was to determine, you know, when that alarm should really go out and when it should not?
Well, its real objective was to determine whether or not these things pose a threat to our national security.
Your host, Paul Richard Price.
All right. And how did the Roberson panel affect what you did as head of Blue Book? Was there any effect at all?
Well, there were, of course, two panels. The Roberson panel was designed to find out whether or not, I guess, we should continue the program or not. You know, in the sense that we were continuing it. I don't think that anybody ever thought that that meant that our forces should not react to anything that they thought was a potential danger to our national security. The important thing was whether or not they wanted to do the second phase, which was all of the research and all of the and analysis that was necessary to really and truly determine what those things were.
Okay. Well, the Roberson panel, didn't they suggest that UFOs did not pose a threat? And that it's, you know, sort of that the public should be kind of quieted down about it?
Well, it's hard to say that you want to quiet the public down about it, because the Air Force had an entire section set up in Washington that didn't do anything except interface with the public on these things. And that was the Secretary's Office of Information.
Okay. Well, how much interaction did you have with the Pentagon? It was suggested that maybe you answered to someone at the Pentagon, and perhaps it might have been Major Lawrence Tacker.
No, I didn't answer to him. Lawrence Tacker was one of the people that worked in the Secretary's Office of Information. He was the guy that put out the pamphlets and so forth that was information and answered letters that came to the Air Force directly from the public. There was still yet another organization up there called Legislative Liaison, and they essentially did the same thing for the congressional people.
Well, did you report to anyone at the Pentagon?
No, I didn't. I didn't report to anyone at the Pentagon. But as I told you originally, the organization when it was ATIC was an element of the Air Staff. It belonged to the intelligence. But later, we belonged to Foreign Technology, and at that time, we were in the Research and Development Command.
Okay, research.
And that Research and Development Command was a command within the Air Force.
That was within the Air Force?
Yes.
Okay. As far as authority goes, what was your role versus the CIA? Did one of you have higher authority? Were you adversaries or comrades, equals or subordinates?
I think that any organization in the Air Force or in the government that had a role would indeed carry out their own role regardless of whether or not something was specifically the responsibility of some other element. Now, as for Blue Book, really and truthfully, as I said, was nothing more than doing the research and analysis that was necessary to make some determination of what these things really were. And we had already essentially determined that it wasn't a threat. It may have been a long-term threat because it may have been intelligence information, but
when was it determined that the unknowns were not a threat?
I think that's done on a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
Each time that there's a report, then the thing that you need to do is to make some determination of whether or not it was indeed a threat, that particular thing.
And about how many reports were you in charge of that there was no determination of what the thing was?
Well, actually, to nail down a specific number is kind of hard because each year had a different number of reports, and we used to put out a report at the end of the year, and that report always indicated those cases that we thought that we either didn't have enough information to make a determination or that we could indeed determine what it was. You know, I think that a lot of people get a little mixed up about the business of security and whether or not you have something that's classified. Classification can come from a lot of reasons. For instance, you may not want some element to know that you know this, you have this kind of information. And if you do have that information, they may not want you to know how they got it and from what source they got it. And sometimes just the information alone would give some indication to someone that, hey, we have a leak in this department or something of that sort on the enemy side. So consequently, we classified some reports, but they were classified, believe me, for reasons other than the fact that they had the potential of being from outer space.
Okay, so you had classified reports. Were they top secret reports?
Well, most of them were secret. Yes, and not top secret.
But all of those reports were classified for reasons other than an extraterrestrial presence or something from outer space.
And that's right. In other words, the Air Force, we may really and truthfully know exactly what it is that has occurred, but they don't want people to know that they have that information.
Well, is that because it's some sort of military experimental craft
It could be for that. Very well. It could be for that. Could easily be for that.
But to your knowledge, there was never any reports that were definitely unknowns, where you had all the information that you needed to make a determination. You didn't have any that you didn't know what it was.
No, I didn't say that we didn't have any that we didn't know. There were some things that we didn't know, but and in this regard, I like to say that we always gave every report as much attention as we thought that we could, and as much attention as it deserved. I know a lot of people thought that what the Air Force did was to make light of a lot of them. Made light of nothing. We took them seriously because it did indeed reflect an experience by someone. And the experience may have been mentally aggravated, or it really and truthfully may have been something that they did indeed see.
Well, what was a case that was inexplicable that stands out to you? Something that you remember that really you didn't know what it was, you had information to determine and you couldn't. Is there something inexplicable that stands out to you now?
Well, the toughest cases to handle, of course, were in those instances of where there were reported contacts with alien beings. Those are the hardest to really and truthfully handle, because number one, I always believed that people had indeed had an experience. Now, I may not be smart enough to know exactly what that experience was, or to be able to track it back far enough in order to tell exactly what it was. You know, but at the same time, I would recognize the fact that that individual had really and truthfully had an experience. And if we could trace it down, that would be fine. However, the Air Force was, I guess that first I would have to explain to the people, you know, just how broad the responsibility was. And I say broad the responsibility was is that the Air Force had an awful lot of specialized capability all around the place. We had metals laboratories, human resources, human engineering organizations, and aeronautical organizations, scientific organizations, and we also had many organizations that had specialized capability that were under contract. And we could use all of these organizations, and we did. Weather Bureau, for instance, if the weather was thought to be a factor, we could get all the information that we wanted to by just going to them. And we went to Kodak, for instance, and their laboratories, and to have photo analyses. And we had the government's National Photo Interpretation Center to go to. We had all kinds of people that we could go to.
So you had a lot of resources.
Yeah, for instance.
And you were confident about those resources, so it's not a matter of not having funds or money to be able to investigate, because you felt that you had all of that, and each case was investigated on its own merit with what you had available.
Yeah, for instance, the laboratory. program is interesting.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, they're saying, oh, it's the NSA has cut them off.
Okay.
You know how the conspiracy theorists are.
No, that's all right. I don't think so. No, I don't think that anybody's trying to hide anything.
Okay, they say we're back.
Good.
One thing that I might have asked a little ago, but I wasn't really clear on, was the CIA also investigating UFOs?
Well, as I said before, I believe that anything that came to their attention, you know, that they would probably react to it. I had only one instance of where I think that they were directly involved.
What was that?
And that was the case of an officer who said that he thought that he was having mental contacts with alien beings.
Did you say mental contacts?
Mental.
Was that?
In other words, what he did was to go into a trance, and from then he was used as an information branch.
Is this
someone you could ask questions of him and you'd get answers?
This is the case that Bob Emmenager talks about. Mrs. Swan?
Yes.
Is that what you're talking
about?
Well,
Mrs. Swan was really, the way, and this tells you something right away. The Navy went to see Mrs. Swan. And then after they saw Mrs. Swan, one of the investigators said that he was doing the same thing that she was doing. In other words, that he had mental contacts with alien beings.
So evidently the Navy was investigating...
That was what I was saying before. I don't believe that the Navy or the CIA or the Army or any organization would ignore anything that happened. That would be like saying that the policeman on the corner wouldn't put the fire out because he wasn't a fireman.
Did you speak with anyone in authority about the Swan case? Were you?
I actually met with all of the people that were involved in it, really and truthfully was such a case that I thought that what we really needed to do was to get some real specialists involved. And at that time, Duke University was doing more work in parapsychology than anybody else that I knew of. And I recommended that that's the way they would take it. However, it was not a case that was belonged to me. It belonged to other organizations.
Well, did it belong to the Navy or the CIA?
I had no way of forcing them to go further.
Okay, now we have a sound problem for some reason.
I got the feedback.
Okay, I did too. Okay, I can hear you fine now, though. I'm sorry. Could you repeat that?
Yes. I said that I don't know what... further happened in that case.
So you don't know who
only
the
thing I only thing to? Only thing I know is that I just made a recommendation.
Okay. Well, did you speak with Arthur Lundell with the CIA about it?
He was there.
Well, did he give any indication it was his case?
No, he didn't necessarily say it was his case. I think it was just a trying to get as much, I should say, attention from other quarters as he possibly could, and I gave him my view, and I just reported, and that was the end of that from me.
Well, did you have any dealings with Mrs. Swan yourself at any
time?
No,
I did not.
Well, what did you think of her story? That I think the story goes that an alien was giving her information. She had like a third grade education or something.
Well, her education was a little further than that. But the real thing about it was is that the kinds of questions that were being put to her were things that certainly she should not have had the kind of knowledge that she displayed. And in a lot of instances, you can ask who was the judge, you know, whether or not the answers that she said she had were in
the
truth.
Do you think she was doing
she was talking about the length of the day on the planet and things of that sort.
Did you get the impression she was duping those that were questioning her?
I'm going to tell you how I felt about it. I really did not believe that she was in touch with any alien beings. But
okay.
I thought, possibly she's in touch with someone. And if that was true, then we should be looking into these things about telepathy and things. That was the only thing. But from the standpoint of the Air Force, okay?
Okay.
I did not believe that there was a spacecraft flying through that area.
But you believe she was getting information from someone?
From something. I think that she was indeed having contacts, mental contacts with something, or whether or not these were things that were deeply embedded in her own memory from some other experiences that she's had, I'd have no way of knowing. I'm not really and truthfully expert in that area. That was one of the reasons why I thought that what they should do was to take her down to a Duke. I would have thought that an experiment like where she and the officer were put into separate rooms and then asked the same questions and see whether or not they had the same answers, meaning essentially they had a common source.
But that wasn't done.
I don't know.
Okay. You know, and the story goes on that, you know, one of those CIA guys or Navy guys, wanted proof, and they said, go to the window, and a craft flew by the window.
Yes.
Did you hear anything about that?
They reported it that way, yes. It was reported that somebody had said to go to the window, and they went to the window and supposedly saw the flyby, and also they immediately checked with the radar in the area, and the radar said for some unknown reason that quarter was blacked out and things of that sort.
Uh-huh.
But when I was there, I suggested that we have a flyby so I could see it. But it did not take place.
So you tried the same thing, and it didn't
take
place.
What was happening is that they were having a passing conversation. He was a conduit.
Uh-huh.
The gentleman was a conduit, and so he said that he was nothing more than just a messenger. Or you ask him a question, he would get the answer through whatever way he was getting this information, and then what he would do is write it out. Now, I did see his writing change. His writing did change. And I do know that he was in a trance of sorts because I could see that in his face and the fact that his Adam's apple was flying up and down awfully fast.
Wow!
So I knew that he was, whether or not he was in a hypnotic trance, self-induced or not, I don't know. All I can say is that what I saw.
And did you ask him a question? And I assume this is the Navy guy, right?
He would not accept the questions from anyone except one person. We'd have to give it to that person who would then give it to him.
Who was that one person?
I think it was Lindell.
Okay. So, did you give a question to...
Well, yes, I asked several questions, you know, like whether or not there was a chosen race and whether or not there was a God and things like that. And they passed some of these questions. They did say there was no chosen race.
Did Oh, there was no chosen race. Yeah. Did Lindell write a memorandum on the case or a report on the case?
How's that?
Did Lindell write a memorandum or a report on this case?
I don't know. I frankly didn't see a heck of a lot more after that.
There's somebody in the chat room wants to know if you got an answer to, was there a God?
The answer to that was that there was a supreme being.
A supreme being. Okay. That, you know, has been one of the cases that Bob Emanager and I have talked about, and I've always thought it was interesting, and it's one that has been around in the UFO community for quite some time. So I think we'll move on now from that, and I want to ask you about another memo. In December of 1960, there was a memo entitled Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, and it was written to the U.S. Air Force Chief of Intelligence. And the memo discussed the problems posed by UFO organizations such as NICAP. And what I'm wondering, did that memo represent your views or those of Philip Evans or both of you or someone else? What? Can you tell me something about where that memo...
What year was that?
December of 1960. It was entitled Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, and it was U.S. Air Chief Intelligence, and it discussed the problems posed by UFO organizations such as NICAP. You know, they can get the public swayed one way or the other.
Yes.
And... did that memo represent your views? Did you author it, or did Philip Evans author it?
I'll tell you the truth. It's a little vague for me right now. I don't remember it at all, but I would... I find it hard to remember that anything...
Well, sure,
where they spoke of these organizations, you know. And anyway, because that kind of information normally would have come out of the Secretary's Office of Information.
Okay.
And but I frankly don't recall that. But as a side, you know, the strange thing about it is that as a boy growing up, I used to read stories that were written by Donald E. Keyhoe, and I thought they were great. So he was in a way responsible for me being in the Air Force, and he was the founder of NICAP.
Well, one of the questions comes from Dee Andrews here, and since you brought up Kehoe, she wanted to know. She said, "I would like to know a little about his dealings with Donald Kehoe, and how much of what he said in his books about Blue Book and." Its personnel is accurate.
Well, Mr. Keogh had his views. You know, he was a retired Marine. He was a pilot and had been in an accident in the early 20s. And after being there, you know, coming out, he wrote those stories, the kind that I read, you know, all about World War One, flying and so forth, and I loved it. And he also wrote a book called Flying with Lindbergh, because he was he was responsible for writing the events as they occurred when Lindbergh made a tour after flying on his long flight to Paris.
I thought
the man, you know, he knew his way around in the military circles and so forth, but I the one time that I talked to him, I told him, I said, I certainly enjoyed your fiction, so if you continue in that view, I guess I'll enjoy it again.
Did Blue Book use JNAP 146 rules to keep information away from the media?
Well, that wasn't to keep the information away from the media. That JNAP 146 actually was a way in which they could get their information into the other circles. Actually, Janet 146 was I say we would say is something that the general public could use, similar to the way in which the military used these regulations. See, we had regulations that told the people how to make their report. It's hard to talk about this without having a little background set up. For instance, ATIC was an organization that had been formed, essentially, and it had detachments all around the country. And what they were doing was looking at these balloons and other things that were floating over into the United States during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were mad with people who had been trained well in how to handle things of this sort, how to report on them, how to perform, get the information that was necessary to those people that would do the in-depth analysis and so forth. Well, now what happened, though...
Wasn't it to prohibit military personnel from speaking? I thought 146 was to prohibit the military or civilian personnel from speaking about UFOs that weren't solved in public.
No. I don't ever remember 146 reading that way.
Okay.
No, I don't remember 146 reading that way at all.
So you felt it was more of something to get information to the public. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I don't believe, for instance, that the Air Force or any element of the military was trying to keep anything from the public. I think that what they were trying to do is to keep the public from believing the wrong thing. That's true.
The wrong thing.
Yeah, well, okay. That's one of the reasons.
So maybe that's why they weren't allowed to report until something had been cleared up.
Well, it makes sense. It makes sense to say that I'm not going to come up and give you an answer until I feel fairly certain about what it is. And also, as I told you before, a lot of times things really and truly may have had intelligence overtones in that maybe we did indeed see something and had something was indeed reported, and yet we knew what it was. For instance, when the Soviets were experimenting with airbursts, well, these things were being reported like mad.
Okay.
We knew what they were, but at the same time, we didn't know what other people to know the extent to how much we knew.
Okay. That makes sense. Another case was in July of 1957. There was a famous case involving an Air Force Boeing Stratojet Reconnaissance Jet RB-47. Are you familiar with that?
Say this again.
In 1957, July, there was a report from an Air Force Boeing Stratojet, Reconnaissance Jet, RB-47. It was equipped with electronic countermeasures gear and manned by 6 officers.
Mm-hmm.
They said they were followed by a UFO for more than 700 miles for about an hour, maybe longer than an hour. And they were flying from Mississippi through Louisiana and Texas going into Oklahoma. Now, the crew has said they reported the event to Blue Book, and when it was going on, they were conversing with ground control about it, and that there was, it did show up on radar, and anyway, they said they did report it to Blue Book. It was never made it into the records. Do you know why it wasn't in Blue Book?
Well, I'm going to tell you, because you're telling me something that I don't remember. I don't recall that at all.
Okay.
Now,
well,
okay, go ahead.
It's a well-known case that the crew said they did report it to Blue Book, but it never came out in Blue Book. So there are some people that knew that I was going to interview you, and they wanted to know, well, why wasn't it in Blue Book? Why didn't it make it into those records?
Well, now, you're asking me a question I can't answer because I really and truthfully don't remember, any recollection at all regarding that specific case.
Okay.
I don't. And now, that was about a year before I went in there.
Right. About a year before.
That was during Gregory's period. And I don't really and truthfully know.
Well,
now, actually, because I did indeed go back and look at a lot of the older cases that had, mm-hmm. you know, created major problems in the business of trying to make a determination of what caused it. And I would certainly have seen that had it been there.
Okay. Yeah. And I guess, you know, it probably wasn't there because that was the question is you know, why wasn't it there? And
well, you know,
that's
another thing, too. Too though that airplane. What was his mission? See, that might have been a real reason for classifying it.
Okay.
Where was he?
It could have
what,
been a
what areas
mission.
Was he flying over? Yeah. What kind of information was he recording?
Okay. Now you worked with Bob Emenager and Alan Sandler on their documentary UFOs Past, Present, and Future in the early 70s, right?
Yes.
And were you instructed to work with them?
No. No, I was not.
Okay.
Not at all.
Well, the story from Bob was that Colonel Coleman said that he was instructed to cooperate, so I was wondering if you were.
No, I wasn't. Now, Coleman, see, he worked out at the Office of Information in Washington.
Okay. You just volunteered.
Yeah, yes, and at that time, I was in another element of the Air Force.
At that time, excuse me, I didn't quite.
I said at that time, what was the year you said?
It was the early 70s. I think it was 73.
Okay, I had just retired.
Okay.
I retired in 72.
Were you sworn to secrecy about anything when you retired?
Well, there were those things that were classified, certainly, that you are not supposed to talk about. That's
can
exactly right.
Can you talk about
right.
it now?
Huh? Well, yeah, everything's been out so much now. I'm not talking about anything that's not hasn't already been put before the public before.
Well, is there anything you can tell us about that hasn't been publicized?
I can't really and truthfully recall anything. You know, everybody speculates a lot about things like Roswell and so forth, and I guess that the speculation will continue until, but I never really and truthfully have heard where the Air Force had taken more than a cursory position as to what happened in Roswell, for instance. But I have my own opinion.
Well, what is your opinion, Roswell?
I, frankly, look at a lot of things first. Number one, I read that story and I read that report. And they indicated, you know, that they went down there and they picked up parts of material that couldn't be broken, couldn't be burned, couldn't be cut, couldn't be anything, right?
But was that newspaper reports or?
But yet they had pieces of it. Well, mm-hmm. How many places do you get pieces of something that can't be broken?
What report were you reading? Was it something in the newspaper or
well,
an Air Force?
All of the reports that have been read about Roswell. Some of them are supposedly official.
Some were official, okay.
Yeah, because they were reported by the officers who were on Roswell at the time.
Okay.
Now, and for instance, and they talk in terms of there being bodies, and in some instances even said that there were people that were alive. or alien life.
Did you see any official reports that said that?
No, I haven't seen anything except some of the things that have been written. And yet, when you really and truthfully ask yourself some questions, as I just did, for instance, how in the world do you get a piece of something that can't be broken?
Mm-hmm.
How?
And
if something hits the ground hard enough, for instance, to really and truly do the kind of damage that was supposed to have done, to where it was scattered around in little pieces, certainly there would have been a much bigger crater than they indicated. I don't remember them ever saying there was a crater. All they did was say that everything was spread out all over the ground. Another thing, too, is if all of this material that they have can go to pieces like that, how in the places did you find any remnants of people at all?
Right.
It's hard
so
to
if
see.
The craft broke up like that,
yes,
then there you wouldn't have seen anything but fragments of
what
bodies.
What could you find? Yes. That's the way I look at it. And, you know, I would personally love to be able to say, yes, I saw an alien being, and so forth, because I would probably be a rich man today if I could. But I don't.
So you don't believe the Roswell story.
How's that?
So you don't believe the Roswell story. You think
my belief is that it was some Air Force material, and that the Air Force knew what it was. But at that time, they didn't want to tell, and nobody still said anything about it still. For instance, when you look at the business of the flying, they went down there to pick that material up, and they said that they were going to take those bodies back to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Now, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is an engineering facility. And in order to get there, they had to overfly Brooks, which is a hospital that the Air Force called its burn center. It was a place where they have all kinds of exotic injuries. And why in the blazes wouldn't they have taken them there? Didn't have any.
Well, that would make sense.
Didn't make any sense to me. I was stationed at Wright-Patterson, and it was the munitions center. And it was the munitions center. I was stationed in the munitions center. And the people that were there were trained to handle that kind of material, radioactive materials and so forth.
Well, we're getting short on time now. And
sure.
There's one more question from the chat room that I want to get in. Because you were at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Yes.
And, you know, there's been a story going around for a long time about bodies there. What about that?
About what?
About bodies at Wright, in Hangar 18.
Oh,
or,
honey,
at Wright-Patterson.
No. Let me explain. There's another thing. I think that, I don't know many bodies like that. But, yes. There was a hangar at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base where they did what was essentially called reverse engineering. In other words, that organization, okay, was designed to get foreign equipment and munitions or whatever they could, and then what they would do is take it to these places and reverse engineer it. In other words, they'd take it apart piece by piece.
Figure out how it works.
As they went through it, what they would do is to try to find out why. Now, in many instances, what you would want to know is, in looking at something from an intelligence standpoint, is to say, God, how could they get this far along without us knowing that they were doing this?
Right. Was it usually Russian craft that were
It could be that. It could be that. You know, people don't even realize, but during World War II, actually a German JU-88 was flown after they brought it back here. They reassembled it out. They took it off the ship and flew it from the East Coast to right Patterson Air Force Base. And he, the way I remember the story, they said it wasn't even reported.
Hmm.
And they were flying over with a German aircraft. But the idea is that we would get any information that we possibly could, and one of the ways of doing that was to have that particular object, whatever it might be, and then reverse engineer it. No, I can't believe that there are bodies at Wright-Patterson. I know that Wright-Patterson has human engineering, and that organization is really and truthfully designed to try to. We ran all kinds of experiments, for instance, before we put any of our astronauts up there. We had what they used to call fly-to-fly-from experiments. I participated in some of those. And just things that you do to make it easier for a man to meld with the equipment. And I really and truthfully don't, for the one moment, remember anything at Wright-Patterson ever where they had bodies. I'm sure
okay.
that if they had bodies, too, that they would probably end up at one of the medical facilities.
Okay, well, on that note, we're out of time.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, I really wish that we could keep talking, and I hope that you can come back for a future show. Would you agree to do that?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Okay.
We're out of time, and I appreciate you being here so much, and I want to say thanks to the listeners and thanks to all of you in the chat room. I've really enjoyed this, and good night, listeners, and good night, Bob Friend.
Good night to you. Nice
bye-bye.
Talking to you and your staff.
Thank
bye-bye.
You.